President George H.W. Bush passed away on November 30th. There has since been many discussions on the legacy of his very eventful presidency. In foreign policy, his handling of the late Cold War in Europe, which culminated in the dissolution of the Soviet Union and the reunification of Germany, has dominated people's attention. By contrast, his policies on the Korean Peninsula have received little to no attention. But President Bush's lasting impact on the Korean Peninsula also should be reviewed and remembered. In inviting then-President Noh-tae-woo to the United States for the first state visit by a Korean head of state since Syngman Rhee in 1953, President Bush strengthened the alliance with the recently democratized South Korea. In addition, he supported the two Koreas' joint accession to the United Nations, and his address to the UN General Assembly in support of the Koreas was the first time a U.S. president had referred to North Korea by its official name in a public speech. In close coordination with President Noh, he drove forward engagements that led to the joint declaration between North and South Korea on the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Our engagements with North Korea today remains informed by the principles and objectives that President George H.W. Bush established: a commitment to eliminating nuclear weapons from the Korean Peninsula, accompanied by the reconciliation of the two Koreas, which will be supported by a robust values-based alliance between Seoul and Washington. Our guest today, Ambassador Donald Gregg, was a key actor in all these developments and will speak to us about the legacy of Bush Sr. on the Korean Peninsula. From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Yeon Kwon, and this is Korean Context. Ambassador Gregg is the former U.S. ambassador to the Republic of Korea, serving during the crucial years from 1989 to 1993. Prior to this position, he was National Security Advisor to then-Vice President George H.W. Bush and National Security Council Advisor in the Reagan administration. He is also a veteran of the Central Intelligence Agency, serving as CIA Station Chief in Seoul from 1973 to 1975. Ambassador, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
You were one of President George H.W. Bush's closest advisors when he was Vice President. Your deployment as ambassador to South Korea indicates that President Bush considered the country a place of high importance. There was, of course, a wide range of issues that were taking place across the world in 1989 when President Bush came to office. Could you tell the listeners a little bit about what issues the new administration was focused on in the Korean Peninsula?
Well, I think there was a feeling that Korea really was beginning to come into its own. President Noh-tae-woo was somebody that we respected, and I think that there was a general feeling that this was the time to really step forward and raise Korea's status higher as a key ally. And it worked out that Bush felt very much that way, and he and I were close, and he and I were able to focus our joint attentions very clearly on Korea during that period.
You mentioned President Bush's personal commitment to South Korea. Where did Korea fit in President Bush's broader foreign policy outlook for the world?
Well, I think that we were trying to really come into a new era. And there was a rethinking, I think, of our alliances and the role that we wanted to play. Japan was emerging. We were working at better relationships there. I was involved in that. And I think Asia really was coming into its own as a part of the world that we'd not really paid sufficient attention to. And I think Bush felt this is the time to really focus on it and to really draw it closer to our objectives and to be clearer in our minds in terms of what the major objectives on the part of the Chinese, the Koreans were.
In your memoir, Potsherd, you mentioned that comparing your time as CIA chief in Korea in the 1970s and as your time as ambassador in the 1980s, you noticed that there was a huge shift in the level of confidence that the South Koreans brought in approaching the alliance. Could you speak on that a little bit for our listeners?
Well, I think that we had had some very good people involved in East Asia. We'd had some good ambassadors in Seoul. And I think there was a general recognition that the Bush administration was a good one. They had somebody in me that through whom they could work closely on the Asian experience. You know, things happen usually because there are a number of factors come together at the right time. And I think that that was a very good time for the U.S.-Korea relationship. And our getting closer to South Korea and it's coming closer to us is really a staunch ally.
One of the things that I found most fascinating in your memoir was the close relationship that was formed between yourself, President Roh-tae-woo, and President Bush. Could you speak to what made that personal relationship between the leaders so robust?
You know, Roh-tae-woo was a terrific person, and he and I were good friends. We played a lot of tennis together. And we had a number of wonderful matches with President Roh-tae-woo and President Bush playing together as partners. We never had a match where the Koreans were against the United States. We always had it, the two presidents playing as partners, and their two opponents were two ambassadors. And I was probably the strongest of the four players, and I could make it pretty clear that the matches were going to be close, but I had a choice of sort of feeling how each match should end, and I made sure that they ended happily for everybody. So it was a really good time where we enjoyed each other as people, where we respected each other for our talents, and it was just a wonderful time to be involved in Korean-American relations.
I think there was someone who made the funny quip about how the two ambassadors had saved their careers in the court by conceding the match to the presidents.
I think it was Quayle.
Oh, right.
It was a dinner, and he got up and said the ambassador made career-enhancing decisions on the tennis court, which I thought was a very good way of putting it.
This very robust and warm relationship on the tennis court, of course, also translated, as you said, on the close coordination in foreign policy. In particular, President Roh-tae-woo at the time was pursuing Nordpolitik, South Korea's engagement with Soviet Union and China, to find new avenues to negotiate with North Korea. President Bush was a strong supporter of this effort. Could you speak a little bit about your engagement with the Korean government during this time period, and perhaps also about the role that the United States played in ensuring that South Korea developed good relations with the Soviet Union and China?
Well, it was just a time where we had very good people in Washington working on our Asian policies. We had a readiness in Korea to be more forthcoming. And through the Finns, I was very close to the Finns. I used to play tennis with them, and they sort of alerted me to the fact that there was this guy, Gorbachev, coming along. He was in contest with another Russian named Romanov, and they said, pull for Gorbachev. He's a different kind of guy. He's more open, and you'll be able to accomplish a lot more with Gorbachev than you would with Romanov. And that was absolutely true. And Bush and Gorbachev got along tremendously well. They met, I think, four or five times when they both were in the presidency, and they were comfortable with each other. They enjoyed each other's company, and an awful lot was accomplished.
I think this speaks to just the importance of developing personal relationships and diplomacy.
Yes, you can overdo that. Donald Trump is not my favorite American president, and I fear that he might have a tendency to sort of overplay the fact that he has a good meeting with somebody, and that but the fact that he gets along with Diplomat X is going to sort of lead to a solution of all our problems. And it's easy to feel that, but it's often a mistake, because the major issues we have with major countries are complicated, and really their solution doesn't really come as a result of one meeting. Their solution usually comes because of a series of contacts, because of talented people on both sides, and a willingness to make compromises in reaching a solution that works to everybody's benefit.
I think few listeners realize that there was a denuclearization effort on the Korean Peninsula during your ambassadorship in South Korea from 1989 to 1993. The George Bush administration, starting with an explicit announcement that all U.S. tactical nuclear weapons were to be removed from deployment outside the United States, began a process that reached out to Pyongyang, getting them to suspend their development of the nuclear weapons. Your voice from the U.S. Embassy in Seoul contributed to this policy. What kind of developments helped strengthen and formulate your recommendation?
I had very good relationships with the people in Seoul and in Japan, and we were able, in sitting down and talking with each other, to say there is really nothing we can do that would be more solid evidence of our moving into a new era than pulling out our tactical weapons, nuclear weapons, from South Korea, because they had been put there during the Korean War. We had threatened to use tactical nuclear weapons at a couple of times when things got very tense, and they symbolized really the depths of the Cold War. And I felt, and certain people in Moscow and Tokyo and Seoul felt, that the removal of those weapons and signaling that we had done so would be real evidence that we weren't just talking about moving into a new era, but we were actually taking steps that moved us into a new era. There were and are hardliners in the United States who didn't like that kind of stuff. I think to remove them and take them off the table is a very powerful signal in one way, but there are certain people who see it as undoing some technical capabilities and undoing our ability to continue making certain kinds of weapons. And that's something that I ran into a lot, and I always fought against it as strongly as I could.
What was the response from North Korea when the announcement was made on the withdrawal of nuclear weapons? Was it as strong as you had expected, or were there areas that surprised you?
I think they were skeptical. There were certain North Koreans who said, well, you know, that sounds good, but we're not sure it's really happening. There was initial skepticism because there had been such a long period of tension between our countries. But as things went on and there was more peripheral evidence in terms of how people were behaving, the delegations that were sent, the places where meetings were held, that made them realize that we not only were talking about removing nuclear weapons, but we were talking about improving our human relations with the Koreans. And as they became more confident in that, they were much more comfortable with accepting the fact that the removal of these weapons was a really big deal.
And one of the big events that helped consolidate confidence between the Koreas and between North Korea and the United States was the cancellation of the joint U.S.-ROK military exercise Team Spirit in 1992. You were a key voice in advocating for this alongside our commander in South Korea at the time. What was the driving motivation behind your recommendation here?
Well, I think that was General Riscossi, if I recall.
Yes.
He was a very civilized guy, and he and I had a very good relationship, and we just said to do this would be a very, very powerful action to take, and he was for it, but there were people within the establishment who were not. Later on, Secretary of Defense Cheney became involved, and he was a hardliner and undid some of the things that we did. His reinstatement of Team Spirit was, I think, the biggest mistake made by the Bush administration during my time. I was not told about it. I was just furious when it had happened, but I was told it was a done deal and there was nothing I could do about it. But it was one of those occasions where the government was not speaking with one voice, and a negative voice took precedence over a positive voice in that particular issue, and it was very unfortunate.
One can't help but draw some parallels between the developments in 1992 and the developments that are going on today. A lot of people speak about the rapid pace of engagements between the Koreas and between the United States and North Korea that happened this year in 2018. But similarly, the pace of developments that were taking place in 1992 was also very rapid. We went from North and South Korea agreeing to a process of reconciliation, and in day's time also agreed to allow for IAEA inspectors to inspect the nuclear sites in North Korea. Given this parallel and given your unique experience in South Korea during this time period, how do you see the ongoing engagements in the Korean Peninsula today?
I don't want to be too negative, but I'm not an enthusiastic supporter of our president. I have very grave concerns about him, and I don't know what kind of things his judgments pivot. So I'm hoping that we can have some stability. I think we've got a good Secretary of Defense. I hope he stays on. I hope his judgments continue to be made. I think there have been some sensible things, and I hope that that kind of thinking will continue, that we can make progress, but it's not going to be instantaneous. It's not going to be the magical handling of President Trump suddenly reaching out and everything's going to be great because he's become involved. That's not the way things are going to work. But if he has a good Secretary of Defense and decent Secretary of State, progress can be made, and I certainly will be all for that, but I think it's going to be slow and steady.
Any memorable moments with President George H.W. Bush that comes to mind?
What a wonderful man. I went to 65 countries with him. I saw him deal with the good and the bad. I saw him deal with the Ceausescus in Romania, who were awful, Mugabe, who was awful. I went to dinner with him at number 10 Downing Street. Going with him to as many, I was his national security advisor for 6.5 years, and that was a huge privilege. And he was just tremendously talented, tremendously enthusiastic, and he represented the country magnificently. And I am so glad to see really pouring out today credit for his civility and for the way he reached out to other people. And it's a reminder of the best within us. I think he awoke the better angels within us. He treated everybody the same, whether it was somebody at number 10 Downing Street or whether it was a man pushing a push cart in the Parthenon in the shadow of those ancient monuments. It was a joy and a privilege to work so well with him, and I hope that occasionally we will have people like him emerge. And I'm just so pleased that his death brings such a powerful memory of how much can be accomplished through civility and respect for the views of others.
That's it for this week's episode. Just a couple of footnotes. Romanov, that Ambassador Greg mentioned as Gorbachev's rival, is Grigory Romanov, who was indeed Gorbachev's chief rival to the leadership of the Communist Party. Finishing the narrative that Ambassador Greg started, the good relationship between President George H.W. Bush and Gorbachev facilitated the engagement between President Noteu and Gorbachev in San Francisco, alongside meetings between senior foreign ministry officials, including then-Foreign Minister Shevardnadze. All these efforts led to South Korea not only gaining Soviet support for UN membership, but also establishing formal diplomatic relations over the protest of North Korea. One other footnote. I think it might be worthwhile to highlight the section in President Bush's speech to the UN General Assembly in 1990 that references his support for Korea's accession to the United Nations, because it captures his principles and commitments quite succinctly. Quote, "We believe that universal UN membership for all states is central to the future of this organization. The United States fully supports UN membership for the Republic of Korea. We do so without prejudice to the ultimate objective of reunification of the Korean Peninsula and without opposition to the simultaneous membership for the Democratic People's Republic of Korea." If you have any comments or questions, send us a tweet at KOREAECONINST. If you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe and rate us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to visit our Facebook page, where you can stream our events live and tune in for Korea This Week every Monday at 2 p.m. when we review the most important developments on the peninsula. See you there!